Blog Talk Radio.
953.
Blog Talk Radio.
Greetings and welcome to the Jewel Network. The Jewel Network is a radio frequency of continuous streaming knowledge and wisdom, which promotes and sustains the activation of the present evolutionary process of immortality and the unfolding of the God Self within the evolving planetary society presently on planet Earth. The Jewel Network is committed to teaching the sciences of life and the science of living. By cultivating the mind of a scientist, you will be able to extract the very best the current century has to offer. You are listening to the Dr. Jewel Show with your host, microbiologist, preventative medicine and hygiene physician, Dr. Jewel Pilgrim, MD. Join Dr. Jewel here each Wednesday at 7 p.m. on the Jewel Network, hosted by thejewelnetwork.net.
Well, greetings, everyone. How are you? And welcome to the Dr. Jewel Show. I'm your host, Dr. Jewel, and this broadcast is being brought to you by the Jewel, Justifiably Enchanted with Enlightened Living by the Jewel Network. And as you know, this is our guest show, and I am excited because we have an incredible fabulous being.
I'm Nichols. I'm on here.
Yes, welcome, Dr. Nichols.
Oh, I'm sorry. I'm just
introducing you. I was just telling the world how wonderful you are, and I became familiar with Dr. Nichols' work maybe about 8 or 9 years ago, and I was just fascinated because this gentleman has such an incredible mind and has a fabulous capability of understanding the science behind social interaction as it is created and affected by philosophical cultural beliefs. And this is a high science that very few of us really understand. However, very powerful organizations and institutions that literally drive the awareness of masses of people known as politics depend on incredible minds like Dr. Nichols and many others to help to devise the strategy under which they can captivate the attention, the awareness of large masses of people. This is an incredible science that literally politicians and marketers on Madison Avenue kind of keep to themselves. Well, why are you being presented with this? Well, as you know, the Jewel Network brings you the sciences of life and living. And this is a critical science that Dr. Edwin Nichols has mastered that is going to literally open the gateway for us on planet Earth to become planetary cosmic citizens. You have to understand, this is very interesting. And I kind of mentioned this to Dr. Nichols when we talked earlier, is that what this gentleman has been able to elucidate through the, quote, psychological, social, philosophical awareness of humans on Earth is extremely important in every human knowing this about themselves so that as we entertain other life forms from other planets, we're on Jupiter, we're on the moon, we're taking pictures of all other solar systems. Of course, we know finally that there's life out there. What this gentleman and many others like him know will be leading edge sciences to help us be able to interact with each other as one species, as well as understanding how to interact with other species from different planets and solar systems. So this is 21st century technology that literally has been kept away from the consciousness of most beings on planet Earth, but this is going to be strategic science that's going to help us make the quantum leap to become galactic citizens. So let me just tell you a little bit about him. He's just so incredible before he comes and tells you what he really does. It's really interesting. Dr. Edwin J. Nichols, a PhD, he is a clinical industrial psychologist working in organization development. He is the director of Nichols & Associates Incorporated, which is an applied behavioral science firm affecting technology transfer to organizations based on principles of philosophy, basic, and behavioral sciences. Now, he's a master in this. I tell you, this one piece of information that he put out years ago was astounding, and it answered so many questions for me as a business person working with the general public. Now, just quickly, because I want you to really hear him, he is in retirement now, and I am so pleased that I'm able to have this time with him, and I hope time in the future. He retired in 1989. However, these are all the things that he's done. He's held positions at the National Institute of Medical Health. He was a visiting professor at the University of Abidjan, Nigeria. He has been an associate director at the Cleveland Job Corps Center for Women. This was incredible what he did. He introduced the concept of, quote, place, unquote, as a total therapeutic milieu. Now, he's taught psychiatry at Meharry Medical School in Nashville. He's developed the first, and this is very interesting, he developed the first, the nation's first adolescent day hospital where clients were mainstreamed into public junior high school systems. Something else he also did, very interesting, at Kansas Neurological Institute, in affiliation with the Menninger Foundation, he demonstrated that dance therapy as an intervention model for severely retarded and extremely physically challenged individuals works. Now, just a little bit about his background, okay, where he got all this knowledge from and capability. Boy, this list is so long, I'm not going to name all of it, but I do want you to know that he literally was educated at Assumption College in Windsor, Canada. He also attended the, now he speaks German, fluent, so you have to tolerate me here now, Eberhard Keil Universität. He also was in Tübingen, Germany. He also received his doctorate in philosophy and psychology at Leopold Clausen Universität in Innsbruck, Australia, and he graduated cum laude. So it goes on and on, Harvard University Foundation, and on and on. So this is an incredible being who I'm so glad is still here with us on planet Earth that is going to assist us to be able to have working, organized relationships with all beings on planet Earth, if they desire, as well as beings from other solar systems and galaxies. Now, first thing, you have to take care of home. And this is one of the things that's so important. As you know, so much work has been released finally that since the early 1970s, we know now that at the level of genetic activation, there's no such thing as race among humans. There's only one race. What we are recognizing is that the genes that we're all working from, the gene pool is 99.9% the same. However, our philosophies, our culture, world perception are turning the genes on and off in very unique ways, down to the color of our hair and the color of our skin. These things can change, will change with. So then what is the barrier, since we now know that it's not race? The barrier still is very much cultural belief systems, values. Dr. Nichols is a master of what is known as axology. And so I'm going to let him tell you all about this, because these are the new sciences, the old sciences really, that we're going to have to master to be able to work side by side with everybody in our species as humans, as we now are introduced to other life forms. So, Dr. Edwin Nichols, I just want to welcome you to the Jewel Network. We're so excited about having you here as a clinical industrial psychologist, and we want you to share with us the beginning of the basics of how we as one race with a very diversified culture are going to be able to manage to work together as one species on planet Earth. Welcome.
Well, thank you very much for such an illustrious introduction. And I tease, I say, after that that much praise, they generally close the coffin and wheel it out.
You always have this great sense of humor. I love it. Well,
I'm very happy to be with you and to share some concepts and ideas. Well, the work that I do is to get us in the United States specifically and people around the world to understand that there are differences, but the differences are not that we are different races. We're all one race, as you've indicated, but we are different ethnicities. And my work is to look at the essence of ethnic difference. So let me show you why I do that. Philosophy is the mother science. Psychology, psychiatry, medicine, engineering, architecture, mathematics, all of those are lesser science. They're like the children of the mother science. And so when you want answers that go beyond your specific discipline, which is very narrowly focused, you need to go back to the mother science. So what does the mother science do that is different from the other sciences? I have a very silly game, and I ask people to play this game, and then at that point, you become clear about what the mother science does that is different from the lesser sciences or the children's sciences. I ask step one to close your eyes. Step two, I ask you to envision a specific noun. And step three, I ask you to open your eyes. So if I were to ask you to close your eyes, and while your eyes are closed, I want you to envision a chair, perhaps even your most favorite chair. Then step three, open your eyes. Now, if we had taken a Polaroid snapshot of what each person had seen, all those chairs would be what from each other? All those pictures would be what from each other? Different. Okay? Now,
oh, no question.
If you were to ask each person to look at each picture, each person would tell you that each of those pictures was a chair. Now, who's the mathematician in the group? What is the probability that you would have that kind of response to that many pictures of chairs? But it happens all the time. So the question is, why? How does the mind grasp that? It's because we understand the essence of chairness, and we would never confuse it with the essence of a table. Even if someone sits on the table and uses it like a chair, it doesn't change the very essence of the table. You see? So,
yeah,
with that understanding of the essence,
right,
then we are able to analyze and understand what is called in philosophy the accidental. So let's go back to the chair model and see if we can understand an accidental. Here is something in front of you that is upholstered. It reclines. It swivels. It's on wheels. But it's still a what?
A chair.
Yes. Yeah. Now, so you can know the essence of something, and you can also very often identify their accidentals. So what I want to do is I want to take the ethnic groups that come to the United States, and I want to examine them from three philosophical disciplines, from their value system, which is axiology, from the way in which they know things, that's epistemology, and the way they reason to answers, which is logic. Now, the thesis from which I work is that human difference which if you want to is ethnicity, comes out of multi-generational responses to the basic human need to survive and to thrive. So what was necessary, multiple generations, thousands of generations back, or to the origin of your ethnic group, or that group of people to be alive next spring, that is to survive and thrive. And my contention is that what shaped all of that was the geographical setting. Where did they live? What was going on where they lived? Were there trees and forests? Was it desert? Was it ocean? Was it mountains and snow? What was it? What were those geographical settings? And then, what kind of resources did they have? Did they have enough water? Did they have enough green things? Did they have enough timber? What were those resources? And then finally, what were the effects of external environmental factors like an earthquake or tsunami or lava flowing down the side of a mountain? What did those kind of things have as effect on the individual in their formative years? So in the United States, we have people who came from Europe, from Africa, Asia, and the Native American was already here. So the last group of people to identify and become identifiable as an ethnic group are the Europeans. See, everybody comes out of Africa. But when you come out of Africa, if you go straight north, you couldn't get into Europe because it was covered with ice and snow, the glaciers. So people went in an easterly direction, always toward where the sun rises. That's the concept. So they go across Persia, Afghanistan, Pakistan, India, into China, into Korea, and then off to the Japanese home islands. So that's the migratory trek. And, of course, some cross the Bering Straits and come down into the two hemispheres that we have here, North and South America. But as they go across this trek, that's how much of the civilization ventured. But 12 to 14,000 years ago, which isn't very long ago, people were able to move into Europe and settle because it was the end of the last ice age.
Okay.
Uh-huh. The end of the last ice age. That's how they got there. That's why they were able to get in there. Okay. So you now have people living in places like Switzerland and southern and northern Germany. Okay? So what was it like there? Well, my conviction is that for Europeans, the highest value is in the object or the acquisition of the object. Now, object doesn't mean necessarily material things, okay? It could mean power, control, and authority, okay? It can also mean money, but that's kind of secondary. For African Americans and Latinos and Arabs, our highest value is in the relationship. And why do I include Arabs and Latinos in that same grouping as with us, with Africans and African Americans? Is because if you look at the world and you go around the equator and you go 25 degrees north latitude and 25 degrees south latitude, in this hemisphere you get what was originally the Incas, the Mayas, the Aztecs, and the Caribbean Indians. And these are the places that were where those people experienced a catastrophic event that changed everything for them forever. They were forced to speak another language exclusively and forced to convert to a new religion. So in order for a person to be Latino Latina, their forebears were subjected to colonial Spain. They were forced to speak Spanish exclusively and forced to convert to Catholicism. So if those three factors are in your ancestry, those three things are there, then you identify today as Latino Latina. There's no ethnic, you know, because Latinos, you can be white Hispanic, Black, Hispanic,
exactly.
Native American, Hispanic. You can be Jose Wong or Fujimori and still be Hispanic. So it's not, you see what I'm saying? It's a people who share an ethnic worldview. They all share seeing the world the same way.
Yeah.
That's an ethnic worldview as opposed to an ethnically identifiable group. Okay?
Yes.
Now, the Asian axiology is that the highest value lies in the cohesiveness of the group. And the Native Americans, the highest value lies in oneness with the Great Spirit. So let's return to the highest value lying in the object for the Europeans and see how that comes about. The way I do this when I'm doing workshops is I ask one white male and three white women to come up to the front, and I place them in a time capsule, and I send them back 12,000 years ago to North Central Europe. And when the time capsule opens, the man has three wives with him, and their task is to be alive next spring.
Okay.
Oh. Now, in North Central Europe, 12,000 years ago, can you plant seeds in the month of September, October, November, or
no.
January, February? No. March, April, May. In Minnesota, the ground is still what in May? Frozen. So you have 3, 6, 9 months in which people can grow nothing. Then the question is, how long is the European growing season? And it's 3 months. Now, here's something that's very interesting, because if you only have 3 months to grow all the food that you're going to need, then we have to develop certain habits and behaviors that help us to accomplish it so we'll be alive next spring.
Correct.
Okay, so if you get up this morning and this is the week to plow, if you don't get the seeds in the ground this week, they won't come to fruition and you won't have the food and you'll be dead. So what if you get up this morning and say, I don't feel like plowing today? Do you have that luxury in Europe?
No.
Okay. I don't feel too well. Do you still have that luxury? No.
No.
You've got to get out there and what? Plow.
Work. Plow. Yeah.
And now, if you don't, you end up what? Dead.
Right.
Now, let's just take that very simple example and try to understand why white people are so crazy about time.
Please explain.
All right. Well, now, if you didn't get it in the ground and it didn't grow to fruition, all of you would be dead.
Yeah.
So the gene pool that we have today of Europeans, their forebearers knew and did what they were supposed to do. When did they do it? At the right time.
Right.
Irrespective of how they felt or thought, when a task is to be done, you do it. And when? Now. Because if you don't, you're dead. Now, that means that you have in a collective unconscious memory of a whole group of people that you have to hurry up and get things done right away and on time, or consequences are severe. So let's put it into a modern office today. Your boss says, I want the deliverable. That philosophically is the object. By close of business today, that's the end of the 3 months. Or you're in deep, and we know what the word is for that. But the reason he's so upset, you listen to the collective unconscious memory giving you another word from that ancient past. The reason he's so upset is because you missed the deadline. You missed the deadline. So it doesn't matter if you bring it in after that. It doesn't count because it's past the time that you have to have it done. You're dead. Does that make sense to you?
That's Nichols. That's where that word then originates from. Yeah, relative to not needing the cycle for activities that support survival on time.
There you go.
Yeah, okay, so that's where deadline came from, okay.
All right, okay. Now, in order, the agriculture at that point in time in Europe was not that sophisticated or that well-developed that you would be able to actually grow enough food to sustain you. They grew a lot, but they had to hunt. And the bow and arrow wasn't that efficient at that time either. You couldn't hit the side of an elk or deer and kill it, which would give you enough meat to take care of your family for a week or so, depending on how large the group of people or small gathering of people that you had to take care of. So whenever people are confronted with obstacles, technology comes in. They have to develop ways to survive. So the technology that developed are pits, snares, and traps. And so as they develop these things, animals just don't go walking around looking for a pit, a snare, or a trap. So someone has to herd them or frighten them into those situations, and that's what the women would do. Now, if you're a woman in your third trimester, you can't be running up and down the mountains yelling and screaming at wild animals trying to get them into the pit, the snare, or the trap. so that men can bludgeon them to death or impale them. So what happens is women in their third trimester went back to their place of residence, and during this period of confinement, they became very observant of everything around them. As a matter of fact, early this morning, there was a little goat in labor. Poor thing was struggling, had a very difficult time. And the woman is observing this goat, and this little goat gets up and goes and bites some leaves off of this little particular bush. Now, she has seen other animals in labor nibble from this bush, dilate, and deliver. Now, ladies, you are in labor. It is not going well. What would you be likely to do?
Go to the bush where the goat went to and pick the leaves and eat them.
Now, from such observations by European women, they developed a pharmacopoeia.
Yeah.
That is, they were able to see the pharmaceutical properties. They couldn't label them, of course, and call them all their chemical names. But they were able to see what worked in what situation. So they developed the body of knowledge that men didn't have because the men were off on the hunt. Last year, we stored food, but it rotted because we didn't know how to preserve it. Now, who develops through transfer of technology the capacity to preserve food, men or women?
Women.
Women. Because you see, dillweed tea will keep you from vomiting, and dill weeds can be used to preserve food.
Right.
So they develop these two things that men don't have. Now, if the highest value is in the object, these women now have two bodies of knowledge that men don't share, which is the object, you see. And now the competition comes in. What are you going to do? Are women going to dominate because they control the object, or men? So in our society today, when a group of people feel threatened about someone else having too much power, they label you. What is the label we put on European women who deal with roots, herbs, barks, grasses, roots, and leaves?
Witches.
What do you do to witches that get out of line?
We burn them.
Okay. Now, let's go around the world and see if this same thing applies. If you are in Asia and you do this, you're an herbalist. In Africa, you're a medicine woman. In native culture, you're a shaman. In Hispanic culture, you're a curandero. None of those are negative. They're all positive. It's only negative in Europe as a label because you were gaining too much power. You would control too much of the object.
Wow.
Now,
we have to hold that right there because we have a station break. And as soon as we come back from the station break, you've got to now tell us how that's going to look when we interact with each other. That's amazing. We'll be right back.
Would you like to be smarter? More at peace in your life? Are you searching for a greater spiritual connection? All of this and much more can be yours by enrolling in Dr. Jewel's Balancing Program. Many participants feel effects from day one, and in no time you can enjoy the physiological effects equal to 8 hours of meditation in as little as 15 minutes a day. To learn more and sign up for Dr. Jewel's Balancing Program, please visit our website, www.thejewelnetwork.net.
Well, if you're just tuning in, this has been an incredible, incredible show. We have with us Dr. Edwin Nichols, who is here explaining to us literally the science behind behavior, cultural differences, and how, as a one genome individuals or people, to be able to interact at a new level in a new way in the 21st century. So we were just talking about axology, Dr. Nichols, and we just finished. We're talking about the difference between the reception of the herbalist in Africa versus the labeled witches in Europe and North America, and the difference in treatment. And that is because of what?
Because that group of people had too much power. Now, let's look at that in terms of what happens in an office today.
Okay.
If you're in an office today and the people for whom you work are not satisfied in the sense that they're threatened by your ability or what you can do, or women are seen as being too pushy or too assertive or too aggressive, which are all good characteristics for men, but not for women in a sexist society. So the first thing they do is they label you, and what's the label we put on women who are assertive women in an office? Same sound, different first letter. Not, it's a B as opposed to a double.
Oh.
Okay?
Oh, okay.
All right?
Yeah.
Is that,
all right.
It's okay? All right. Uh-huh. Now, when that doesn't get it and make you get back in your place or change your behavior, then they compound it with mental illness, and they called you a crazy bee.
You're right. Okay.
And the reason you're crazy is because you suffer from penis envy.
Okay.
And none other than Dr. Sigmund Freud told us that women suffer from penis envy. Therefore, it must be correct.
Oh, boy.
Okay? So the relevance is that labeling is what we do even today.
Yes.
Okay? And we carry it to a point at which we discredit you completely by saying you're crazy.
Yeah.
Oh, don't pay attention to him. He's crazy as hell. That's how it comes out. Or her. You see? So you're looking at the mechanisms of control in an office today from those ancient times. Now, once women try to assert themselves, because here's what happens. If you are a man and you're given the responsibility of rationing the food that has been preserved, stored, and allocated for 9 months, you have the power and the strength to control that food. You can keep people from eating too much too soon. You can protect it from people who attack to try to steal it from you and so on. The question is, though, when does a month begin? And North Central Europe 12,000 years ago, what would a man observe in order to know that this is a new month? This is so I can start allocating food for this month. It would be observing of the moon. But in many times in Europe, you couldn't even see the moon. So
right.
That throw you completely off track. The question then is, whom among us, with great clarity and regularity, can tell us 1 month from another?
The woman.
Yes, because of the menstrual cycle.
Right.
Okay. Now, that is a very powerful tool, because women learn to count and measure centuries before men could grasp the concepts of counting and measuring. And that gave them too much power, because in February in North Central Europe, you say to the man, at the beginning of the third moon, you can plant. By the third moon, you can plant. Well, here it's February. The snow is up to the ceiling, beyond it, two stories high. So what's she going to do with it? Eat it? So, but February, March, April, May, at the end of the third moon, you can plant. That's just too spooky. You didn't understand it. Is she a witch? Is it witchcraft? How does she know? You see? How does she know? So in this situation, just like today, when something is important to you and valuable to you, the dominant society will relabel it and make you not want it.
Wow. Wow. Say that again. You have to repeat that.
All right.
That.
Even
very powerful.
When the dominant society or someone has something, you know something. They don't know it. They can't control it. And they can't get away from you. Then they relabel it and makes you feel like it's terrible. And you don't want it either. So here's the proof. As men, we say to you, when you have your menstrual cycle, it is God's what upon you?
Curse.
There you go. So you're cursed. And some cultures say you're unclean and you can't sleep here and you got to take purification baths, and they just go on and on about how unclean you are. Okay? And it's a curse. It's a curse. It's God's curse on you. Oh, my goodness, it's really bad. Now, semicolon, however, comma. Only a man could have thought of this.
Correct.
I don't mean to be vulgar, but I want the people to listen and be very clear in their own mind about what happens when other people redefine you. If you woke up this morning and you started your period, how would you feel? As opposed to you woke up this morning and you were 4 days late. Now you tell me when you feel cursed.
Yes.
Is that clear?
Yes.
You see what happens when we permit other people to define us.
That's correct.
African Americans, we have permitted people to define us.
Yes.
They have told us that our care is bad and nappy and kinky. But when they go to Africa, they develop a pit helmet that holds the hat up off their head and permits the air to pass under as they sweat and cool it.
Just
and
like
our hair naturally does that.
Right, exactly. Just like African hair. Yeah.
That's it.
Yeah.
So it's redefined. Okay? All right?
Yeah.
They told us that big lips were big, ugly lips. And now people are putting what in their lips to make them big?
Fat and silica.
Yeah.
Silicone. Yes.
And they tell you, oh, they have such a big butt, a big butt. Oh, black women have a big butt. What are they now placing back in their maximus gluteus to make it look larger?
Saline and silicone.
All right. Okay. So, and they have breast what? Enhancement.
Yes.
Okay? And they all tell you your breasts are too big. So if you permit yourself to let others define you, it's to their advantage and to your disadvantage.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, your skin is black and ugly. They burn themselves and have cancer, staying out in the sun trying to get dark. Where's the logic in that? See, we have to not let people define us, but we define ourselves.
Correct.
Okay? Television are telling our children that they are so inadequate that they have to go around killing each other. And they repeat it over and over. Every night on television, you're told, yes, how many murders? And, of course, what do our children do? They go around accepting it as reality and acting in that way. Killing each other rather than thinking in terms of who's causing the problem. It's not your neighbor down the street who's as poor as you are, or the guy who has a pair of Nikes and you don't. It's a system that you have to understand and be competitive in. That's the difference. Now, let me very quickly talk about the axiology for us as African Americans. And that says the highest value is in the relationship.
Yes.
And if the highest value is in the relationship, how does that come about? Well, if I place you in Equatorial Africa 80,000 years ago, one man and three wives, when it opens, the question is, can, if a man goes out and gathers seven large stalks of bananas, can he store them in Equatorial Africa for 9 months?
No.
Yeah, no. 9 weeks? No. Not even 9 days, because they will what?
Rot.
Yes. Now, the question is, though, is it necessary in those environs to store food?
No.
And the answer is no. So, what took Europeans so much time, so much energy, so much effort, and a rapid pace to get it accomplished is of no consequence in Equatorial Africa, or where the Incas, Mayas, Aztecs, and Caribbean Indians live in these two hemispheres. So then, are women then equal to men? Well, all cultures start out with women being equal to men. But in Europe, it changed because they changed the rules. Now, when people change rules, the courts corroborate the change and make it law. So they change the rules, which is that woman is not as good as man, and if he tells you to get out in February, you would freeze to death and die. And so to survive, women act subordinate in Europe to their men. Then the law, the court comes in. And what does the court do? It says that according to European law, European women are the what of their husbands?
Chattel.
Yes, chattel,
yeah,
which is philosophically object.
Yeah.
You hear them saying, don't treat me as a sex object.
Right.
See how the language all pulls together?
Yes.
Now, if you're an object in a marriage, then can you keep your dowry? No. They kept the dowry of their wives because if the wife acts simple, they could threaten to divorce and she'd be penniless. And in English common law, you have the capacity to beat your wife with a stick in order to discipline her to make her be obedient to you and your household. Now let's see what happens when we go to the African experience. As an African woman, if your man told you get out, could you take palm leaves and weave them in such a way to keep make a shelter over yourself?
Yes, you could.
Yeah, all right. Now, could you get your own food, your own bananas, your own yams? Could you get them?
No question, yes.
Okay. Now, there's a snake crawling, and it's going to bite your child. Either your child is dead or the snake is dead. Which is dead?
Snake.
All right. Now, what you have just done as a group of black women is you have given me three of Maslow's hierarchy of needs. You have told me you can provide your own food, your own shelter, and your own safety.
Life.
Now, if you can do all that, what you need him for? You see? So it means that you are equal in your socialization. That's how we survive slavery, because men would be sold from some place like where I live here in Washington, D.C., Maryland, Delaware. You're too close to Pennsylvania. Men could, strong young men, run away, go up north. Okay? So when the slavers came through, when they got to be about 16, 17, big, strong, ready to run away, sell him to a slaver, and he goes, he's sold down to South Carolina, North Carolina. You never get out of there. Work
got
there.
It.
You see what I'm saying?
Right.
So the woman then is left to take care of herself and her child. And this has been the existentialistic reality of African women and African-American women, specifically, for centuries. If anything happens to the male, you have to be able to take care of yourself and your child. So now let's look at it. If you are socialized to see yourself as equal, can you be the property of somebody in a marriage?
No, of course not.
Okay. The wedding comes. You've seen African women with gold rings and gold necklace and gold chain, and just gold everywhere. Do they take off all that gold and give it to the man when the wedding's over? No. They keep it because if anything happens, they have to be able to take care of themselves and their children. That's where they keep the dowry. Now, what happened to white women in terms of their dowry? The dowry was taken away from them. But if anything happened to the husband, then his family, who had collected, who had inherited her dowry, would be responsible to take care of her and his children. So it's a different way of seeing who takes care of whom. African-American women are independent. Now, let's look at that dowry and see if there's anything like that today. Lovely young couple just got married. Sam and Rosetta just got married. Lovely young couple. And Rosetta says to Sam, we have to save money. And here's the past savings book. And we are saving money. And every month he looks in there, and money has been deposited in the past savings book. Sam and Rosetta, right on the top of the past savings book, and he is so happy. He's so happy he's helping her to clean up the house. He's cleaning an upper bookcase shelf, and another past saving book falls down. Whose name is on that past savings book?
Only Rosetta.
That's it. You got it straight. So sister girl knows to keep your dowry in modern times. That's how we do it. You think? Now, were white women able to do that? Not really, because what happened? What happened to white women is, not present day, but back at the beginning of the century, or not this century, but 1930, 35, somewhere in there. If you had, a white woman, you had a bank account, your husband could go to the bank and withdraw the money because you are his wife and therefore his property. So what is yours is his. Okay? So being in this country, black women recognize that's what could happen. And so sister girls say, well, I got it, but you ain't going to find it. Okay? So it's hidden. It's a hidden account. Okay? Now, let's look at these two situations and these two groups of women and put both of you in an office.
Hold that thought now. We have one more commercial, and then you can tell us what happens in the office. We'll be right back. Thank you.
From Jewel Publications, Straight from the Heart by Dr. Jewel Pookrum, an incredible volume of work Dr. Jewel explores the genesis of disease, prostate health, and sexuality, as well as sharing a new look at the effects emotions play in the resolution of cancer. Straight from the Heart is an outpouring of wisdom that you will read over again. Get your paperback or ebook copy today.
If you're just tuning in, you must make sure that you get the archive and listen to this. This is incredible information, and, you know, it's so much more. I do hope that you can persuade Dr. Nichols to come back and tell us the other half that's still got to be revealed about our other cultural sisters and brothers. But right now, you just have to just be quiet, and he's going to tell us now what happens in the present-day environment in the office, this very different cultural awareness and ethnic psychology that we've carried for thousands of years. So tell us what happens now in the office. We have an African woman.
Okay. When you get several, you know, maybe 30 years ago, when we began to get to recognize from the census data that the number of white men was not going to be sufficient to run everything as they had in the past, you begin to bring in women and minorities. And when you begin to bring in women and minorities, you begin to see differences in ethnic behaviors. All right? If you are a black woman and you have been socialized to see yourself as equal all the time, when you walk into a meeting and they ask for opinions in this circle of people sitting at the desk or at the table, do black women have any qualms about stating what they think is a proper idea or a way to do it?
No,
just speak it right up. Okay. Now, if you have been socialized that you're to be seen and not heard, you're reluctant to say anything. If you do say something, historically, women are completely ignored, just like you didn't say it. Then what you said 2 minutes later or 3 minutes later is said by a man, and it's like it's gospel, the best thing since sliced bread. Now, how do you feel about that? You see? Well, if your survival over the centuries as a white woman has been not to be overt and out there, then you find ways of subterfuge to get what you want. So you say, well, I'm not sure. I really don't know. But maybe we could look at it this way. Okay?
Mm-hmm.
When you are a sister girl, somebody presents a dumb idea. You don't say, oh, that's an interesting idea, let us examine it. You say, that's crazy, and that ain't going to work. Okay? Now, let me give you some examples of things that have happened. Years ago, when they used to do computer pools, you know, the computer pool, and people have to do punch cards and things like that,
uh-huh.
Or were just starting to do computerization, and people, you had to set up your own code. You had to do your own coding and set up your own program. Because of the way that we conceptualize things, which is holistic, is different from the way Europeans conceptualize things. They want things to be in parts, and they put all those little parts together to make the whole. We are holistic thinkers. What would happen in this computer pool is they would put a white boy over 30 black women working in the computer pool.
Mm-hmm.
Well, every time they would turn in a program for him to examine, because he was not able to count it and measure it and know it from his perspective, he would turn it back, which means their work would pile up. And so, rather than to get too far behind, they would come in on a weekend, put their program in, run it, and put the results on his desk. He would be furious. He'd have to accept it because it's done, but he didn't know how it was done. Somebody asked him, he couldn't explain it. And so you had real conflict going on in terms of what people did. What happens then is he's promoted and goes on. Now the next person to come in is going to be this white woman. They're going to put over all these black women in this computer pool. And she's insisting that they do it one way, and they're saying there's more than one way to solve this problem. And, of course, what happens is, instead of keeping her there to resolve the conflict within the office, she goes to her boss and starts crying about how scared she is, how intimidated she is, and how frightening it is to be with those people in that room. And she's transferred out.
Ooh.
Okay. Now what happens when Sister Girl gets to be in charge? If she does not recognize that the relationship is the most important thing to get that work done, she won't be successful either. Hopefully, she'll recognize that there is more than one way to solve a problem. Everything is not parts to the whole. Some things you can proceed holistically and get the right answer.
Yeah.
These are the kinds of things that we need to be mindful of as we take our ancient understanding of axiology and bring it to the modern present-day world. Okay?
Yeah, well, this is, like I said, this is 21st century knowledge that has to be broadened and revealed across the planet, Dr. Nichols, because so many people, here we are, this is November 14th, 2012, and most people worldwide that are listening here have never, ever been exposed to this, and I'm sure that they have been brought into an awareness that in their own personal lives, at the office, socially, that now explains the behavior and the values and the reactions that they've encountered with different members of their family, especially if they have had intercultural bonds made on the job, socially, et cetera, that now they can understand that the seriousness of how they have formed opinions and judgments, et cetera, were totally distorted and really had no foundation because they did not have the axiology and the history to understand how over generations these were household values that were lived as to why people respond this way. And can you imagine how many people have been died, murdered, argued, and executed because of the lack of understanding of this very critical science that you explained so well that is so necessary for us to move forward so that we can literally be a galactic citizen.
Yeah, let me just add one thing that people ask, I sometimes forget to make the comparison. Remember we talked about European time, you start work at A, you end at B.
Yeah.
If you come at A prime, you're late, and we dock your pay. Why do we dock your pay? Because the space from A to A prime is an object that has been lost or wasted and
mm-hmm.
has to be paid for. Now, can you make it up during lunchtime? No, because the interval of lunch is less than the interval from A to B prime, to A prime. Can you, I came late, so I'll work late. That won't
sure.
work either because you have missed the deadline. You see what I'm saying?
Yeah.
That's how it sounds like to other people. It sounds like, no matter what I tried to do, that boss is always just, it ain't good enough for him. I said I would even work late. Well, what he's saying is the work hour is over at B, and you're trying to extend it to B prime. Now, let me tell you what is the time for Africans and for for the Incas, the Mayas, and the Aztecs.
Well,
in Mali and all those places, people have understood the cycles of the sky, stars and everything centuries and have observed it and made predictions and understood when to plant crops and everything. And what I would like to share with you is that it works on a spiral. So if you look at the solar system, it's spiral. So much so that you can build a temple in the middle of Central America, and the one star will come and shine right into that temple through its window and light up the whole temple once a year, and each year, same day, same time, same space. You see what I'm saying? Now, in Mali, you had people in Mali, of course, and you've talked about this, I'm sure, the Sirius star, that Europeans didn't realize how many moons it had because it would take a high-power telescope to see. And yet these people were able to ascertain it without microscope at all. So if time works on a spiral, then what does our language tell us from our collective unconscious about our understanding that it works on a spiral? Well, you say what goes around
comes around.
Okay. And in Hispanic, you say, when are you going to do it? I'll do it mañana. Because it doesn't begin and end, it's on a spiral.
Exactly.
So you see, if you put the two people in the office, one who is going to die at the end of the close of business today, and the other one is thinking, you know, I can do it today, I can do it tomorrow.
Tomorrow, right. Exactly.
Okay. So now, the attitude, of course, then is, oh, those people, they are never on time, they never have a sense of urgency, they're never committed, and you see, but that's called deficit modeling. And if we permit that, then we're letting other people define us.
So I want you to repeat that label, because we've just about reached the end time for this show, deficit modeling. This is so important. And I have to ask you, would you be willing, Dr. Nichols, to come back and tell us more? We have to know more about this science. This is so critical.
I would be very glad to. We'll have to figure it out. I'll do that with Maurice.
Okay, wonderful.
The thing
wonderful.
Is that in our culture today, the first thing that people do to discredit you is to label you.
Okay.
And when you're in office, they label you and make you the troublemaker. And then they label you other things too. In labeling, it goes so far as to declare that you're mentally ill.
Mm-hmm.
Or you're a crazy troublemaker. Pay no attention, he's crazy as hell. The other thing is that when it goes beyond that and they really can't control you by calling you names, by labeling you, then they try to destroy you. And the way they destroy you is to take whatever's positive that you have and turn it against you by redefining your important things for you. They redefine it for you. What's been a positive for you is redefined as a negative. And you then are socialized to accept that as the reality.
And with that, I just want to say thank you so much for this enlightenment. You are a gold mine. You are so valuable for reconditioning and re-socializing humanity on planet Earth in the 21st century so that we can move forward into our future as planetary galactic beings. We're not planetary yet because of just this issue that you just labeled for us, this labeling. And so with the science of really understanding why groups of people are like they are and now being able to accept that and really appreciate it, we can literally genuinely stand together, genuinely commit to each other, and now we can be a unified force, a unified species on planet Earth as we go forward into our solar system and into the galaxy. And, you know, I'm just really pleased, and I want all the listeners to understand that these are the new sciences. This is the new cultivation of an understanding of who you are and why you are the way you are, so that self-acceptance can now be the premiere of your perception of yourself, because, you know, this whole, I think, outrage that is happening, that we don't trust each other, that, you know, we're so aggressive and so fearful now that because a person has a hood on their head, you have a whole barrage of labels and concepts and ideas that justify you going into military mode and literally killing people. This is what's being happening now. And it's all based on literally a misunderstanding and an ignorance of factors that have literally built a psychology of how we interact with ourselves, with our environment, and with others. So, again, I'm just so pleased to be able to see your incredible gift, and I look forward for it to take lead on recultivating and re-educating humans about themselves so that we can take our rightful place together as one species, because this is very much so the reason why the Earth is dividing itself. The waters are polluted. The food is now being contaminated because we have this idea in our heads, groups of people, that, you know, if I don't control your food and if I don't have the right to be able to force the land to function and produce a particular way, I should be the one to decide how the waters are going to interact. And with this narrowness, we've literally contaminated everything, and the unification and the cleansing has to happen in the consciousness of humans, and the earth will then basically forward that position and clean itself up. It's going to do that anyway, and what we don't understand as humans is that if we don't clean ourselves up and become a wholesome being, as you've described, then we and planet Earth are definitely going to have to separate. And this is what this real mystery is that most people can't understand, that is what 2012 is about. You are a key formula and solution for 2012 being one of the best experiences in your life. If we can adopt the understanding of what you have taught and collected over these years and apply it immediately, this is going to be a huge, it's going to be a really a huge party from 2012 to 2017, not doomsday. And I do want you to understand how valuable this information is and what you bring to us. And I thank you for accepting the invitation, Dr. Nichols, to come back, and we will get that straightened out as soon as possible. And I want to say thank you, and I'm going to invite you to tune in on Friday to listen to Mr. Maurice Thompson, The Mind of a Scientist, and how he is using many of these concepts to introduce us to a new awareness of music. And I'll be back on Monday with the Dr. Jewel Balancing Show, and you're just a fabulous being. Dr. Nichols, thank you so much for being here with us.
You're very welcome, and thank you.
Bye-bye. Bye, everybody. Make
Bye-bye.
Sure you listen to the archives. Bye-bye.
Thank you for listening to the Jewel Network. For our complete broadcast schedule, additional information, and to purchase products, please visit our website at www.thejewelnetwork.net. If you'd like to reach us, please send an email to info@thejewelnetwork.net.